Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Hi, good friends. How are you? I hope this finds you in good health, safe. Yeah? Chapter numero cinco, number five, the parable of the herbs. One of the seven great parables of the Lotus Sutra. This one confuses a lot of people because they think it's about herbs. It's a parable, okay? You got to remember how these teachings work. They're thousands of years old, yeah? And to get the attention, hold the attention, and get the people of those days very mystical, culturally programmed with magical thinking, using herbs, trees, shrubs as stand-ins for human beings, more specifically, the relationship of mind and body, how we learn, how we perceive, cognitive skills, and how we inculcate that knowledge into our day-to-day existence via our bodies, our thoughts, our words. It's quite complex. So analogies like this break it down to a more simple way of understanding, which sometimes the simplicity is so simple and people, like I have, you know, I know autism is a real popular topic these days, but I have autistic tendencies I've had since I was a very young child. And I have OCD, and I have a screw all the list of acronyms and blah, blah, blah. I tend to take things literally. And I have to work through that literality, I'll make up a word, because it's an obstacle. It prevents me from seeing the associations, which otherwise I would see really, really well. In fact, it takes time, but I eventually do. Probably why I ended up doing what I do, because I understand that arc of collecting knowledge, letting it stew and simmer, low simmer, until it finally boils and comes out of the pasta pan. And then I get, So I know the arc, and I know it's really common. For some of us, it's very brief. For some of us, maybe it takes a really long time. So I'm trying to mediate. So this parable of the herbs isn't about herbs. It's about how we're all a little bit different, right? Oregano isn't quite the same as lavender or thyme or sage or apple tree. I'm stating the obvious, right? But think of it biologically. Think of it at a cellular level. Oh, gee, there's a lot more in common than there is different. How astounding is that? Well, that's you and I. As similar as we seem, we nevertheless, with every moment of our karmic freight train, collect, identify, make known, quote unquote, with the filters of our epistemology, our previous knowns, and the influence of the 3,000 realm is every single thought moment. What mood we're in. And we perceive things we can all identify as the same thing. And yet, deeply in our minds, we make associations. Heck, we don't even know most of them. But we term them in because we're very superficial. Not because we're stupid, but because that's what our brain and our mind does. It makes things easier for us to navigate in the Saha world, right? But that's samsara. And samsara is, yeah, we all agree what that is, but I have a different feeling about it. When I see one of those, I get a little chill because I think they're slimy. Slimy? They're just very cold to the touch because they're cold-blooded animals. Ooh. We both know it's a toad. We both know, right? We know these things, but we experience a lot different, a little tiny bit different, right? So the parable of the herbs is about the innumerable differences from the exact same exterior influences. In this case, the teachings. So we started with a huge assembly that wasn't quite getting the same teaching. They all observed, all took those teachings and infused them with their little biases, their cultural stigmas, their known knowns, their epistemologies. And now, with the Lotus Sutra, okay, we're putting a stop to that. First of all, please recognize this is the problem. You've never really gotten the full picture. And just to keep you practicing, I had to give you an intermediate picture because you were ready to quit. And I thought once you learned enough and trained yourself enough, you would start to get it, but you haven't. All you've done is stop yourself, right? And one after another, from Shariputra to Mahakashyapa to Subhuti to all of the other head monks, holy crap, we never understood. And they're getting it now. Oh, they're starting to get the renge. They're starting to open their minds. But now there's a danger in that, right? And Shakyamuni was talking about that. If you teach somebody the full mani when they're not ready, that can cause tremendous problems, right? Tremendously bad causes can come out of it. So you don't want to be the one making the causes, and you don't want to be the one setting people up to fail, right? We want to set people up to succeed, right? Okay. So to kind of, what word would go well here? Kind of elicit everybody into the fold. He's perhaps a little worried that he might lose a bunch of the assembly because they're going to think, oh man, we've been like these senior monks. Oh, we have no chance of this. We're too old. We've been doing this the wrong way so long, and getting all depressed and running off again, right? So now he's going to give us a teaching to let us know it's okay. Just now that you know, let's go. Right? Inspire a little confidence in them. Let them know that this is just the progress of the practice. Some people are quick and will get to it quicker. Some people, many people, like myself, we get a little too literal and we miss the point and we continue to miss the point. And at some point, that point, can I say point again? Becomes a point of light. Ha ha ha, I used it. And suddenly, it's very transcending. Right? But it doesn't do any good to feel guilty about, quote, the past, because it ain't here. Be appreciative of the light you have now. How? Oh, this is so cool. So here we go. At that time, the world-honored one addressed Mahakashyapa and the other great disciples, right, who just gave him this parable about how stubbornly stupid they were, causing their own ignorance, and suddenly discovering, oh, it's been here all along. Right? But they claim to be very joyful and excited that they're now getting it. Lest they backslide, Shakyamuni is now going to encourage them, right? Good, good, Kashyapa. You have well proclaimed the real merits of the Tathagata. Now, I would like to take out the in that sentence, the definite article, because it's kind of misleading. I have already defined for you that Tathagata is the engine of life. It is always abiding in the universe. It is the way all phenomena instantiate from potential to realms of form, yeah? Like you and I, and the stars, and the so on and so forth. So really, this sentence should read, you have well proclaimed the real merits of Tathagata. Not the Tathagata, like it's a thing. Do you see? It's a little thing. Not the Tathagata, but that word. But do you see how bias and rhetoric can mislead? So I'm definitely going to take that one out. Truly, they are, as you have said, the Tathagata, there the belongs, because now we're talking about the Tathagata in its entirety, in addition, has infinite, boundless, innumerable merits, which if you spoke of for infinite codas of kalpas, you could not fully express. Well, there it is, right? You can't talk about something that's out of your reach, right? Like the restaurant at the end of the universe. Thank you, Doug Adams. No, Kashyapa, the Tathagata is the king of the law. It is the law. Whatever he declares, now he's using it as a personal pronoun, he declares. He's really talking about Buddha now, this earthly manifestation of experiencing Buddha wisdom, Buddha knowledge, Tathagata-ness. Stay with it, though. Is wholly free, entirely free, I might change that to entirely, from falsity. He expounds all the laws by wise tactfulness, right, skillful means. The law taught by him all leads to the stage of perfect knowledge, right, anuttara samyak sambodhi. I'm making a lot of notes today. The Tathagata sees and knows what is the good of all the laws and also knows what all living beings in their innermost hearts are doing. He penetrates them without hindrance. Moreover, in regard to all the laws, having the utmost understanding of them, he reveals to all beings, all living beings, the wisdom of perfect knowledge. So again, he's really talking about Buddha here, right? So I would say another way of interpreting Buddha, and maybe I should look at my Buddhism reference and add this to it. Buddha being a Saha world experience of Tathagata. Makes sense, right? All right, moving on. Moreover, in regard to all laws, all functions, all truths, all experiences, having the utmost understanding of them, he reveals to all living beings the wisdom of perfect knowledge. Kashyapa, suppose in the 3,000 great thousandfold world, there are growing on the mountains, along the rivers and streams, in the valleys, and on the land, plants, trees, numerous kinds, thickets, forests, and medicinal herbs of various, numerous kinds, with names and colors all different. A dense cloud, right? Now you got what I said earlier about that, right? Trees, grasses, blah, 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 blah. This is the sentient minds, the living beings, yes? But let's think of them. It's easier to think of our growth, our personal growth, from the standpoint of something that has roots and trunks and stems and leaves and branches, right? Okay, sorry, I'll stop. a dense cloud spreading over and everywhere, covering the whole 3,000 greatfold, thousandfold world. Now, he's talking in terms of the trichelioclasm. Never sure if I pronounced that right. He's not just talking about Earth. He's talking about the living space of the cosmos. Okay? Interesting that 3,000 comes into this, because our moment-to-moment existence is influenced constantly by 3,000 realms. So there it is. It's a conceptual mental exercise, right? Wherever life occurs. This dense cloud covers all of it, pours down its rain equally at the same time. So even though this is a vast place, and you and I experience rain and heavy showers, light showers, we drive a car and oh, the rain's coming down really hard here, but not so much over here. What he's describing is the same rain, same volume, same thickness, same amount everywhere. Okay? Like the teaching. The same teaching. The rain of the teaching spreading all over wherever life occurs. Universally, equally at the same, its moisture universally fertilizes the plants, trees, thickets, forests, medicinal herbs with their tiny roots, their tiny stalks, tiny twigs, tiny leaves, their medium-sized roots, medium stalks, medium twigs, medium leaves, their big roots, big stalks, big twigs, and big leaves. Every tree, big or little, according to its superior, middle, or lower capacity. Whoops. He couldn't help himself, right? The analogy, he's spilling it out because he doesn't want anyone to miss it. Doesn't matter if you're 6'10" and you weigh 350 pounds or you're 4'6". And you weigh 76 pounds, male, female, or whatever, in between, pronouns being what they are, doesn't matter. You're all sentient minds. And the rain of the teaching is poured on all of you in equal measure. But from the rain of the one cloud, each according to the nature of its kind, acquires its development. An interesting way to put it. Opening its blossoms and bearing its fruit, though produced in one soil and moistened by the same rain, yet these plants and trees are all different. Not only that, but as he'll describe, the oak tree may be drinking a lot more of that rain via its roots than the tomato plant. Or maybe the tomato plant equals it. It's deceiving, right? But certainly that little slow-growing I don't remember the name of that plant. Anyway, you get the picture. Some plants are slow-growing. They don't take nearly as much water because they're not that big. But for their needs, they're getting the same teaching, the same rain, the same amount to their satiation. It's just that it takes less for them than it does for the others. They all get their nourishment, right? That's the point here. No, Kashyapa. That the Tathagata is also like this. He appears in the world as a Buddha, like the rising of that great cloud. Universally, he extends his great call over the world of universal realms of influence, men and Asuras, just as the great cloud everywhere covers the 3,000 great thousandfold region. In the great assembly, he sends forth these words, I am the Tathagata in the form of Buddha. The revered, the all-wise, the perfectly enlightened in conduct, the well-departed, the understander of the world, the peerless leader, the controller, the teacher of the universal realms of influence and men, the Buddha, the world-honored one. Those who have not yet been emancipated, I cause to be emancipated. Those who have not yet been set free, to be set free. Those who have not yet been comforted, to be comforted. Those who have not yet obtained nirvana, to obtain nirvana. These four acts correspond with the four universal vows of a bodhisattva. I vow to save all living beings without limit. I vow to end the numberless distresses. I vow to know all the laws without end. I vow to accomplish the supreme Buddha way. So if you want to be a nun, or you want to be a monk, there's your vows. Not hard, right? I suggest you do them at your butsudan after your daimoku and just as you begin gongyo. Pronounce these vows. Make that commitment. That's my recommendation.
In fact, I'm going to put this on the website.
I think that's an important one. Okay, moving on. I know the present world and the world to come as they really are, right? Because moment to moment to moment, he's in it. He's immersed in it. He's not concerned of the past. And he's only looking toward the future, which is happening now. Now. I am the all-knowing, the all-seeing, the all-knower of the way, the opener of the way, the teacher of the way. Come to me, all you universal realms of influence, men and Asuras, to hear the law. At that moment, numberless thousands, myriads, codas of classes of living beings came to the Buddha to hear the law. Thereupon the Tathagata, observing the natural powers of all these beings, keen or dull, zealous or indifferent, according to their capacity, taught to them the law in varying and unconstrained ways, causing them all to rejoice and joyfully obtain much profit, reward. All these living beings, having heard this law, are comforted in the present life and afterward will be born in happy states, where they will be made joyful by the truth and also hear the law. In other words, Namo Myoho-renge-kyo, you open your Buddha eye, and from that point into every successive moment, you now see. You understand what you're experiencing, right? Having heard the law, they are freed from hindrances, and according to their capacity in all the laws, they gradually enter the way. We all have a different path in practice to maintain that eye, right, of Buddha-ness, and apply its wisdom to our saha existence. That's coursing as a bodhisattva in the Buddha way. That's what that means. Just as the great cloud raining on all the plants, trees, thicket, forests, and medicinal herbs, and according to the nature of their seed, perfectly fertilize them, so that each grows and develops, so the law taught by the Tathagata is of one form and flavor, that is to say, deliverance, abandonment, extinction, and finally, the attainment of perfect knowledge or experience. If there be living beings who hear the law of the Tathagata and keep, read, recite, and practice it, as taught by the Buddha, their achievements will not yet enable them to understand their own nature. What? Their achievements will not yet enable them to understand their own nature. For what reason? Because there is only the Tathagata who knows the seed, the form, the embodiment, and the nature of all these living beings, what things they are reflecting over, and what things they are thinking, what things practicing, how reflecting, how thinking, how practicing, by what laws reflecting, by what laws thinking, by what laws practicing, and by what laws attaining to what laws. There is only the Tathagata who in reality sees clearly without hindrance the stages in which all living beings are, just as those plants, trees, thickets, forests, medicinal herbs, and others do not know their own natures, superior, middle, or inferior. The Tathagata knows this unitary essential law, that is to say, deliverance, abandonment, extinction, final nirvana of eternal tranquility, ending in return to the empty, quiescent energy. The Buddha, knowing this and observing the dispositions of all living beings, supports and protects them. For this reason, he does not immediately declare to them the complete and perfect wisdom. Kashyapa, all of you, a most rare thing it is that you should be able to know the law taught by the Tathagata as he sees fit, and to be able to accept and able to receive it. For what reason? Because the law taught by Buddhas, the world-honored ones, as they see fit, is difficult to discern and difficult to know. This is why we have to, in the Saha world, practice, keep enlivening that Buddha-ness. Right? Because it so easily slip right back into samsaric mind. Identification, data collecting, accrual, possession. They come streaming right back in. The more we develop our Buddha eye, our Buddha-ness, and experience it, the more we mollify and appease those formations. Isn't that right back to the Four Noble Truths, right? At that time, the World Honored One, desiring to proclaim this teaching over again, spoke thus in verse. The Law King who destroys existence appears in this world. According to the natures of all living beings, he teaches the law discriminatingly. The Tathagata is greatly to be honored and profound in its wisdom. For long has he kept secret the essential truth, not endeavoring hastily to declare it. Boy, I really want to make this chapter clear. The wise, if they hear it, are able to accept and discern. The ignorant, not stupid, ignorant, they just don't know, doubt and turn away, losing it perpetually. Therefore, Kashyapa, according to their powers, I teach to them with varied reasonings to bring them to right views. Slowly, come this way. No, Kashyapa, it is like a great cloud rising above the world, covering all things everywhere, a beneficent cloud full of moisture. Flashes of lightning, right? Renge, shine and glint. The voice of thunder vibrates afar, bringing gladness and ease to all. The sun's rays are veiled, and the earth is colored. The cloud lowers and spreads as if it might be caught and gathered. Its rain everywhere equally descends on all sides, streaming and pouring without stint, enriching all the land. On mountains, by rivers, in steep valleys, in hidden recesses, there grow the plants, trees, and herbs. Trees, big or small, the shoots of all the ripening grain, sugar, cane, and grapevine, all these by the rain are fertilized and abundantly enriched. The dry ground is all soaked, and herbs and trees flourish together. From the one water which issued from that cloud, plants, trees, thickets, forests, according to their need, receive moisture. All the trees, superior, middle, inferior, all, each according to its size, grow and develop roots, stalks, branches, and leaves, blossoms and fruits in their brilliant colors. By the pouring of the one rain, all become fresh and glossy. The one rain, you see, he's hammering on that one Buddha vehicle rather than the lesser three, yes? Just as their bodies, forms, and natures are divided into great and small, so the enriching rain, though one and the same, yet makes each flourish. In the same manner, the Buddha also appears in the world like a great cloud, universally covering all things. And having appeared in the world, he, for the sake of all living beings, discriminates and proclaims the reality of all the laws. The great, revered, world-honored one, among the universal realms of influence and men and all the other beings, proclaims this, saying, I am the Tathagata, or the embodiment of the Tathagata. The most honored among men. I appear in the world just like a great cloud to pour enrichment on all parched living beings, to free them all from misery, and so attain the joy of peace, joy in the world, and the joy of nirvana. Universal realms of influence, men and all, with all your minds, hearken to me. Come, all of you, here and behold the peerless, honored one. I am the world-honored one who cannot be equaled. To give peace to all creatures, I appear in the world, and for the host of all the living, teach the law, pure as sweet dew. The one and only law of emancipation and nirvana. With one transcendent voice, I proclaim this meaning, constantly taking the great vehicle as my subject. I look upon all living beings everywhere with equal eyes, without distinction of persons or mind of love or hate. I have no predilections, nor limitations or partiality. Ever to all beings I teach the law equally. As I teach to one person, so I teach to all. The same rain. You, what you do with the teaching is specific to you. This is also where skillful means finds its way, but let's leave that aside for now. Constantly I proclaim the law, never occupied with anything else. Going or coming, sitting or standing, I never weary of pouring it abundantly upon the world like the rain enriching universally. Honored and humble, high and low, lawkeepers and lawbreakers, those of perfect character and those of imperfect, orthodox and heterodox, quick-witted and dull-witted, with equal mind, I rain the rain of the law unwearingly. All living creatures, on hearing my law, according to their receptive powers, find their abode in their several places. Some dwell amongst universal realms of influence, or men, or revered wheel-rolling kings, or Shaka, Brahma, or other kings. These are like smaller herbs. Those who know the faultless law and are able to attain nirvana, who cultivate the six transcendent faculties and obtain the three clear views, who dwell alone in the mountain forest, ever practicing meditation and obtaining pratyaka buddhahood. These are the larger herbs. Those who seek the world honored one, resolving with we will become Buddhas and practice zeal and meditation. There's that word zeal again. These are the superior herbs. And these Buddha sons, who single-minded walk the Buddha way, ever practicing compassion, assured that they will become Buddhas, certainly and without doubt, these are named shrubs. The firmly settled in the transcendent faculties who roll the unretreating wheel and save infinite hundred thousands codice of living beings. Such bodhisattvas as these are named trees. The Buddha's equal. Teaching is like the one rain. But beings, according to their nature, receive it differently. Just as the plants and trees each take a varying supply. The Buddha, by this parable, tactfully reveals, and with various expressions, proclaims the one law. But of the Buddha wisdom, it is as a drop in the ocean. I rain down the rain of the law, filling the whole world, the one essential law, to be practiced according to ability, just as those thickets, forests, herbs, and trees, according to their size, luxuriantly develop. The law of all Buddhas, ever by its essential oneness, causes all the worlds universally to gain perfect weal. Gradually by its observance, all attain the way's fruition. Anuttara Samyak Sambodaya. Sarvakas and Pratyekabuddhas who dwell in the mountain forests are in the final bodily state and hearing the law reach fruition, are named herbs, each progressing in growth. As to the bodhisattvas who are firm in wisdom, penetrate the triple world and seek the highest vehicle, these are named shrubs which gain increasing growth. A moment ago he said they were trees. Again, those who practice meditation and gain transcendent powers, who hearing the doctrine of the empty, greatly rejoice in their minds and emitting innumerable rays, save all living beings. These are named trees, which gain increasing growth. So he's kind of varying it, right? Again, making the point that just because you're a shrub doesn't mean all shrubs are the same. Like the herbs, which he defined differently, yeah? Or the trees, for that matter. Like this, Kashyapa is the law taught by the Buddha. It is just like a great cloud, which, with the same kind of rain, enriches men and blossoms, so that each bear fruit. No, Kashyapa. By numerous reasonings and various parables, I reveal the Buddha way. This is my tactful method. All Buddhas do the same. What I have now said to you all is the veriest truth. This is the ultimate truth. All Sarvakas have not yet attained nirvana. Right? According to the extant Sanskrit original, this line can be translated, come to attain nirvana. The way in which you walk is the bodhisattva way, coursing as a bodhisattva with the Buddha way. Is the bodhisattva way. A lot of ways here, yeah? Makes sense, though, if you break it down. By gradually practicing and learning, all of you will become Buddhas. Now, I have a long footnote here. Nichiren drew much from this chapter in regard to the nature of Shakyamuni's use of the parable of the teaching as rain, feeding variously needing plants with their specific requirements. While in exile, Nichiren wrote the opening of the eyes and many other writings to speak on the universality of the Lotus Teaching's effects. All practitioners, no matter their current life condition, would be capable to awaken the Buddha life condition with each their own path. Additionally, the implications of this parable of the rain, representing the totality of Shakyamuni's teachings, only to be absorbed variously in accord with those capacities of individual minds, actually demonstrate that the Buddha is a pre-existing feature of life. Compared with this, with the engine of life, that is, the process by which all phenomena come to instantiate in moment-to-moment formations of energy, this process is a universal expression to be witnessed and experienced by sentient minds individually. Buddha simply is the process or action, karma, of being. And it is to the dedication and effort of each sentient being to awaken to its presence. And that ends chapter 5 and takes us to chapter 6. So what do you think? What do you think of that story? You think Shakyamuni was just trying to catch everyone before they started doubting again? I think he did a good job. I think the parable really works. Granted, you know, I'm going to change a little bit of the wording because it doesn't take much to trip and miss it. Right? Enlightenment is simply turning the light on and seeing everything for what it truly is. Enlightenment. So why wouldn't it be the same for every sentient mind to experience? Things look different on the surface, and that's what samsara is so clever at doing. But by looking at the surface, we often miss what is formative. How'd all this superficial stuff get here? Oh, ultimately, like science, like neuroscience, like particle science, like name an area of science. They keep digging and digging and digging. And the deeper they go, the more universally they discover. This is why the same antibiotic. That's why the same antibiotic suits so many millions of people. Because fundamentally, what it does is something we all share to varying degrees. Anyway, I'll stop making analogies. You will attain Buddhahood. Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. Me telling you how I did it isn't going to help you. Me sharing with you what I've experienced, which is what I'm trying to do here, hopefully, the goal is, helps you to find your own aha moments, yeah? Your own renge. Because that's where, ultimately, it must happen. Right? Thank you. Thank you for being a bodhisattva. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. All of it, all the, from liking and subscribing, super easy, helps us expand the Sangha. It's a bodhisattva act. All the way in between buying books, buying mandalas, the bookstore, the mandala store, even downloading the free podcasts. Anything you can do to help the activity and support financially patrons, universal bodhisattvas you are, universal worthy. Keeping this boat afloat, it's a big endeavor. I often, I don't talk about it much, but there's a lot of behind the scenes that goes on to keep this going. So you guys help keep me afloat, to keep this channel going, to keep adding new content, to keep working, to support you and myself in our mission for enlightenment, yes? Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Take care of your health, and I'll see you for chapter 6. Bye for now.